We're back to the Neil Haley Show here on the Caregiver Dave Celebrity Segment. I'm excited to welcome the program Caregiver Dave and the Sandy. Dave, what's going on? How are you?
How you doing? I'm doing good. Can't wait to get to Philadelphia is where I'm going.
Yeah, you're not going to Pittsburgh. You're going to Philadelphia. We're going to talk about why Philadelphia. I love Pittsburgh. And you know why? Because I'm a Pittsburgh guy. And our guest today, we're excited to talk with her. She's going to have some really good, interesting conversation. I'm excited to welcome the program actress Florencia Lozano. You know her from Narcos and One Life to Live. And we're going to talk about life after you. Florencia, thanks for coming by. How are you?
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm great.
All right, so let's talk about it. Did you always want to be an actress growing up? Was that something you always dreamed of?
Yes. Yeah, I remember being on stage in third grade, and we were doing a musical of The Emperor's New Clothes. I was the head villain. And I remember the feeling of applause when the audience applauded us at the end, feeling like this light coming into my body, being like, I need this adoration. Like, shameful perhaps, but I really love I love performing and getting that love from the audience. I was also the youngest of three daughters, and it felt like the only stage was the only place where I could just sort of express myself. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
I was with my sisters for airtime. I was younger, so I didn't know as much. I wasn't as fast. You know, I wasn't as grown up. So I felt like the only place I really had to shine was on stage.
And you had to shine in front of your family too. So that's the funny thing. You had to figure out ways of gaining attention being the youngest.
Yes.
And even though you do get a lot of attention as the youngest, you still want more and you figure out ways of doing it, right?
Yeah. Totally. And I was also kind of the clown in my family, like the one who was trying to just make everybody take things a little less seriously. You know, my parents are immigrants, didn't have a lot of money growing up, and they were really, you know, struggling to give us a better life. So they were, you know, kind of serious. And I just loved to see them smile. So I would entertain, you know?
So Florencia, did your parents know that you had this gift and were very supportive? And did your siblings also have the gift, or were they jealous of you? I mean, what was the family dynamic going on when it first was evident that you were going to go in this direction?
My parents were really supportive. And I realize now, you know, so many of my friends didn't have that. And that's a huge thing to have parents. You know, my dad was an architect, and he would always say, you know, do what you love. And that I took it for granted at the time, you know, but now I really am so grateful that he pointed us in the direction of what we love to do. My sisters are not in my field. One is a pediatrician who specializes in public health, and the other works for the DA. So she's a prosecutor. So very, very different career choices. And they were always supportive of me. You know, the middle sister, I was only a year and a half younger than her. And I think she was, you know, I was always very kind of like clinging to her and wanting to be in her shadow. And she was my big sister, and I kind of worshiped her. And she was like, oh God, what a pain in the ass this one. You know what I mean? She wanted her independence. But they always protected me, you know, like older sisters do.
Sure. How did, I don't know where Neil went. I can't see him.
You see me, Dave?
Oh, there you go.
Go ahead, Dave. I'm going to go to my next question for Florencia. You know, when you think about specifically enough, what age did you decide this is going to be for you? So you always wanted to, what age did you decide, okay, acting is what I want to do and I'm going to go full force. This is going to be what my career is.
I can't ever remembering a time where I didn't know that this was what I was going to do. I don't even know how old I was. You know that commercial, that Angelique commercial with the woman with the dishwashing gloves? I can bring home the bacon, Angelique. I don't know if you guys remember this, but she was stripped off with dishwashing gloves. I had no idea what that meant, but I would perform that for my parents' dinner guests. I can't believe they let me do that. I must have been like 5, you know? And
I'm a woman.
I was like 5.
Oh, that's
so you would never, so you did it. So when did you take the break? This is going to be your, so you said you knew all your life you wanted to do it. When did you take the break? Did you move to Hollywood? What was the whole process? To LA, or how did that go?
A big thing with my parents was education. Mm-hmm. My parents were both teachers for a while. My mom taught Spanish for like 40 years. My dad taught architecture, and then he had his own office. But they were really, really adamant about us getting an education. And so, even though I knew I was going to be an actor, and I danced for a while. I took ballet for a long time. So for a while there, I thought, I knew I wanted to be on stage, but I thought maybe I would be a ballerina. But that proved to be like, at a certain age, you have to decide that that's all you're going to do. And I wanted my world to be a bit bigger than that. So I stopped dancing and finished high school. And then I went to college. And knowing I would be an actor, I majored in literature, and then went to New York. I wanted to have something to bring to my acting. So I always loved reading. And in some ways, like when you do a play, it's a lot like English class. Like you sit around and you talk about the play. You talk about the themes of the play. You talk about the characters. You know, the study of stories is really, akin to what we do as actors. It's like, who are these people? What happened in their lives? It's this kind of psychology, history. You get to really dabble in all of those arenas. And so there is an intellectual sort of, if not academic, element to it. But then there's also, a really physical dimension to acting, where you're embodying someone else. You're walking like that person. You're internalizing that person. And I was always drawn to imagining what it is to be someone other than myself.
And that's the amazing thing. Dave, what thoughts? Next question. Yeah.
I'm curious how the last couple of years affected your career, the COVID and lockdown and masks and vaccinations, all that stuff.
It's amazing how flexible I find theater people to be, because of course theaters were dead, right? What we do is literally get in a room with other people and tell stories, share the same air. So it was amazing how, we adapted, and people did radio plays. I did a podcast through the public theater. We did Romeo and Juliet in Spanish and English online. We did a recorded version of it. actually Lupita Nyong'o played Juliet, I played her mom. So we got to do all of this incredible stuff that was, you know, sort of a hybrid of theater with Zoom, really. I recorded a play all on Zoom where they literally sent all the actors green screens. Like, I set up a green screen in my living room, and then the theater put in the background afterwards. So it's kind of amazing to see how theater people just adapted. TV and film was a little different. I actually ended up getting a Netflix show, shooting a Netflix show in Vancouver last summer. So when things looked to be getting a little better before Omicron, I went to Vancouver. I had to quarantine there for 2 weeks, then get tested all the time. It was a big strain on production, you know, because film and TV production is already such a labyrinth of different schedules and just logistics. So the people in production had this added task of having to test us all. And I felt really bad for them. I mean, I just was like, on top of everything else, now they have to worry about the plague, you know? But they did it, you know? And it was great to shoot this show in Vancouver. Then I came and did an episode of Bull on CBS, and we shot that in Brooklyn. And that was the same thing, you know, lots of COVID testing. So I was really impressed by how my community like rose to the occasion and was like, we're going to do this hell or high water, and we're going to figure out how.
And that's the thing. And I was also checking out, you know how to monitor and adjust because you started in soap operas, your career. So really tell how intense it is to shoot seasons for that, because it's everyday type of thing. And you constantly have to be on the go. You have to monitor and adjust. You don't have time to do your lines. So probably that's why you're always needed to be in some sort of thing, because you know how to monitor and adjust when you audition and everything because of what you dealt with. Theater and soap operas, I think, are the best probably training base places for actors. Wouldn't you agree? To really have to learn to go with the flow, because that's what directors are looking for. That's what producers are looking for when they're looking for a cast.
I always say, like, one of the skills that soaps gave me was just getting up to bat, like get up and start hitting. Like, you know, you have to do it quickly. And it taught me that. It taught me, like, make a choice and just start swinging at the balls. And cause you have to go. We have to tape this show, a whole show, in one day. And so now when I did that episode, Bull, and we do 8 pages a day, and people are, you know, rightfully, you know, kind of anxious about, oh, that's a lot of material. After having done, you know, a whole show in one day, I'm sort of like, we can do this. We can do it, you know?
Yeah, definitely. You can do it. That's for sure. And that's where you've developed that skill set to now what we're going to talk about today, because you, through that experience of being on all these amazing shows and experiences, now you're starring in Life After You, and talk a little bit about that and how you're involved in this, not just acting, but how this is really a big deal for you, isn't it?
I mean, it's a big deal in terms of, yes, for me personally, and it's also, unfortunately, you know, it's such a huge problem right now. What the movie addresses is this opioid epidemic that has gotten so much worse since, you know, the story was inspired by the death of Danny Latterman in 2014. And it's now 2022. And unfortunately, The story is more timely than ever. The batch of heroin that Danny OD'd on was laced with fentanyl. And fentanyl is so ubiquitous now in all kinds of street drugs. And what our movie is really trying to do is ring that alarm bell and tell kids, listen, the drugs that are out there now are different than the drugs our generation used, right? There is poison in it that may kill you after one use. And that is something that I think everyone who made the movie, I know everyone who made the movie is really passionate about getting that word out and starting that conversation. Charlene Giannetti, one of the producers on the show, she is a journalist, and she interviewed Linda Latterman, who is Danny's mother. And after Danny OD'd, and Linda and her husband Tito found their son, their 19-year-old son, in their home, in his room, after he had OD'd. And about a month after that happened, she wrote a post, a Facebook post, in the middle of the night, because she didn't know what else to do. Every time she closed her eyes, she would see her son's face. The way he looked when she found him. And so she wrote this post and it went viral. And so Linda ended up writing a short book called Life After You, What Your Death from Drugs Leaves Behind. And it really is meant to scare the crap out of kids. It's meant to say, look, this is what happens, literally. Your sister and your brother need to write your obituary. You know, these are the things that will happen to your family. And Charlene, after interviewing Linda, came to me. She had known my work as an actress from TV. And she said, I want you to play Linda. I know nothing about film production or screenplay writing, but we have to tell this story as a film, so that more people hear it. And I don't know what got into me. Well, I do. I met Linda. And after hearing her talk, I was very inspired by how she said that she continued to talk to her son. And that made me think, well, what if we told the story in a more less traditional way? Less like, well, this happened and then this happened, but more emotionally, what was Linda's journey in terms of letting her son go? She was in such complete and utter shock. She was so at a loss when he died. She really had no idea what he was up to. So this film is telling the story of her trying to come to terms with how could this have happened. So in the movie, she continues to talk to Danny, and he continues to be present in the film. So I asked Charlene, I said, can I write this screenplay? Can I try to write this screenplay? I had never written a screenplay before. I had written plays, short stories, but so I started writing it with the woman who ended up directing it, Sarah Schwab. We co-wrote it and shot it right before the pandemic.
Wow. Yeah. This is powerful, Dave, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, it takes a lot of trust because they're just going to think that you're just trying to scare me, you know, and I agree, you need some kind of creative, new, never done before way of communicating. And, you know, Hollywood is a creative entity. If anyone came up with one, they can.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, writing the screenplay, wow, that was really going into the woods and trying many different avenues. We went off in many different directions to try to find the right way. Really, as you were just saying, the question is, how do we get through to kids? How do we penetrate that divide, right, between because we were all kids, we remember how it was, where, there's this code of, you don't tell the adults. And how do we try different tactics to try to warn them without alienating them, without pushing them too far away?
Oh my gosh. And that's what you're doing is such a powerful thing. And I remember watching American Greed with this guy that was doing it on the dark web selling opioids, but they were laced with fentanyl and different. He didn't care about the specific drug. And, it was really dangerous. So, people think, hey, I'm just getting something. It's going to be a painkiller. I can drink with alcohol. Everything's going to be fine. And they're getting it from the dark web. And that dark web could lead to an overdose. Or, buying it on the streets. You just never know. And that's why you got to be careful with any of this stuff because we all know opioids are addictive, but add fentanyl to the mix and it's a deadly, sometimes it can make you sick, sometimes it could be nothing happens, but another person, they're dead. And it doesn't matter what age or whatever situation. I'm glad you're bringing light to this because the news doesn't want to bring light to this stuff. They talk about the opioid addiction, but they don't talk about the drug addiction and the process and how many things are laced with fentanyl, even marijuana. You just don't know. You got to be careful. And I'm glad you're bringing this movie out for sure.
Yeah, without getting political, it all comes across our southern border and nobody seems to want to do anything about it.
Okay, babe. That's Dave's comment. And he did get four. Okay, so let's go right now to the Dave, your question regarding caregiving.
Yeah, so my wife, 25 years ago, we're married for 47 years, about halfway through. She complained of a headache that she had for like 4 days. And she was going to go to the doctor, but then it turned into a stroke. She lost her speech, became paralyzed. And we grieved for for the next 2 years, I should say. And we decided that, hey, life hands you lemons, turn into lemonade. And so we reinvented ourselves, and she decided to do everything she did before. She was very talented, a cross between Martha Stewart and Wonder Woman, and she's a gourmet cook, an interior decorator, a wedding coordinator, etc. So she's doing it all with one arm and one leg tied behind her back and duct tape over her mouth, in essence, because she can't speak verbally. And she just makes all us normal people look like whiners and complainers. So I go around the world and the country speaking on stages and been on 52 TV shows, just helping people to survive because 30% of caregivers die before their loved ones do. My question to you is, how has caregiving touched your life, or do you fear that it will one day?
It's a really good question. My father actually fell this December, and it caused this whole spiral of events that all, knock on wood, ended up well. But speaking of my sisters and I came together to figure out how to support him. I ended up going to be with him. He had broken his hip. And do you know, it was the best Christmas of my life, spending that time in my dad's nursing facility. He was in a rehab facility. They were in lockdown because of COVID. It was, but my dad was so vulnerable. He was so open. I felt like I got to take care of him, and that was a gift, which I never expected that. I was so surprised that like it was a gift to be able to to be physically intimate with him in a way I never had been before. It was a lot, and I can only imagine what it is long term to do that with someone. I got him on a plane. My boyfriend and I got him on a plane to Seattle, and now he's in Seattle, where my other sister lives, and she's really taking care of him now. But thank God that there's three of us who can. We all have different abilities too, and so we can trade off. Like, you do this, and I'll do this, and having a network of support is a huge plus. But it really made me grateful for the things that I took for granted before. And I remain grateful.
Maybe you can send your sister to our online support center, caregiverdave.com. It's got bunch of gifts. You know, I've written books, I've got podcasts, I've got videos.
You got a really popular Facebook page.
Yeah, 34,000 Facebook followers.
The really engaged group. Check it out. Now, where can we find the film and stuff and watch it? I know there's YouTube right now for the preview. When's it coming out?
So people can check it out. It actually is available for purchase, is that what it's called? I think so. On Apple, iTunes. One of the producers just emailed me about this because I asked him that very thing. He told me it's going to be in 100% of households. So you can pre-order it on Apple TV, iTunes. I think it's on pay-per-view. Basically, if you have cable TV, you can rent it.
That's great.
And then it'll be streaming in like 3 months. It'll be streaming, I believe, on Netflix, Hulu, all of those.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, congratulations with the work, but you're doing such great work. Any other projects going on right now? You're staying busy. You said you're filming Netflix last year and different things. Anything you can tell us about a project coming up for you?
So the Netflix show that I shot in Vancouver is called Keep Breathing.
Okay.
Keep Breathing. It's a Netflix show that should come out in like August, I think. And it's a lot of fun.
Any other projects, or that's pretty much it right now? Or you're staying busy, I'm sure.
I'm staying busy. I also just recorded another radio play called Kisses Through the Glass, and it will be available on the Two Rivers Theater Company website.
Okay.
So that's something else.
You really have a good voice, so I can tell how you would be good for that radio. I could see listening to you read to me. So the way you have that voice, I can tell. All right, so appreciate it. Where can we follow you on social media? Best place to connect with you on social. Where can we go? Where are you?
I have an Instagram, which is all lowercase. It's my name with an underscore between the first and last. So lowercase Florencia underscore Lozano lowercase.
Excellent. And for those Narco fans, go back and check her out when she was in Narcos and different things. And yeah, I was reading some of the places. Your Wikipedia is pretty impressive. So continued success in everything you're doing. And this project, I definitely want to learn more and hear more what's going on. This is a tremendous project. We got to let people know the dangers of taking things that, guess what, are not coming from the right sources, because it could be your last chance of life. So I appreciate you stopping by.
Of course. Thank you guys so much.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate it. Okay. All right. That was the Caregiver Dave celebrity segment here on the Neil Haley Show for television and radio. Take care, guys.